From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Children of the night, and welcome to a new episode of Bob After Dark. I'm your host, the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever wonderful, ever vampiric, ever cape wearing, ever the heartthrob of Bob After Dark, my friend, my producer, Count Pank himself. Oh, hey there, Count.
Oh, Bob, yes, we are back.
We're back.
We
are back with a new episode. This was the longest break we have ever taken.
Wow.
Other than, like, the COVID, but I was still running the show during COVID.
Yeah.
I was running it solo. This was our first, like, actual break. Well, somebody's like, oh, are you guys on a season? Somebody asked me, are you on a season break? Because some shows do that. Yeah. Some podcasts legitimately do that. You know, typically around December, they'll do what they call a season break,
and
they won't do one. We've never gone on a three-week break before.
Well, Bob,
It was definitely a strange feeling to be out for a couple weeks. And I think we owed the audience a little explanation.
We got a lot going on there.
And February and March are the hardest months to get episodes in when we do them live. For our podcast fans, you have to understand that when we record the show is live on the radio as well. We record at a radio studio. And during the months of February and March, we have to balance the college basketball schedule out with us.
Sports conquers all.
And sports will conquer us any day of the week. So when basketball comes in and basketball season's, you know, in full swing, we have to move around a little bit. And usually we're able to accommodate the moving around by picking a different day.
Weather.
Problem is, we were dealing with nasty weather the past couple times we tried rescheduling. We had a really bad snowstorm the first time we had to reschedule due to basketball. The second time we had to reschedule, it's always like a last minute thing because we never know when the schedule is going to be until the week before. So then the following week, we had to get bumped and moved around, and it had to be that Thursday we bumped back to. The problem of that Thursday was I was on the road to Ohio because I had my appearance at OhioCon.
Conventions have to be
convention.
Made too.
My convention appearance had to be done. So then we were prepped and ready to go for last Tuesday. Unfortunately, last Tuesday was another basketball game, and we had to move it to the following that Thursday. That Thursday would have been fine. The problem is I had to get out to New York City for one of my best friends Dan Hoffman's wedding. Congratulations, Dan and Caitlin. So I had to fly out to New York City that Friday, but the problem was we were expecting a nasty snowstorm again on the Thursday before my flight. So I had to go stay out closer to the airport. So I made sure I had a ride and I could get to the airport safely on time come Friday.
What a mess.
So I made sure because I was going to extend my stay in New York a couple days and hang out in New York and go to Manhattan and whatnot because New York's like my second home. I was going to extend my vacation a couple days and go and spend some time that's not wedding involved. But instead, here I am. I figured I would come back home on President's Day and get myself moving and ready to go.
But, Bob, I was following your travels on social media. I mean, you went far and wide between Ohio and New York. You even got a chance to see Amityville Horror House.
I did. You're spoiling.
Oh, okay. Is that segment three? I didn't look at the list today.
Yes. So that was... All right. So first week, what did we do the first week while we were off? Because we got to do a back and forth weekend update for the past 3 weeks.
It's been like 3 weekends already.
That's fine. So my first weekend, we dealt with snow. I shoveled a lot.
That's a lot of snow.
We got a lot of snow that time.
And then we got the snow next, the following week as well.
The following week, I was in Columbus, so I couldn't tell you what happened. We didn't get any snow.
But then we had the snow after that.
Yeah,
right?
But I was getting ready to fly.
That's right.
We'll start with Columbus, because this is going to be the first episode from folks that listen from Columbus. We had five appearances at OhioCon in Columbus, Ohio. Five panels. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. By my fifth panel on Sunday count, I was so tired. My brain was mush. Made it work, though.
You made it work.
Shout out to Dr. Ben Vanderson. He came out to Ohio to give me a hand with the panels, and it worked out great. Everyone except, like, our Thursday one, in which Thursday, you know, you're going to get a hit or miss. We still drew a decent crowd for, like, a Thursday of setup day. We had wall-to-wall people every panel I hosted that weekend. Wall-to-wall people.
That's pretty good, Bob.
And the Paranormal and You panel was standing room only.
Yeah.
So, like, it was impressive.
People got their Bob After Dark fix.
Yeah, and there were people that knew me from prior OhioCon events. And believe it or not, there were people that listened to all five panels. There were people that showed up to all five of them. I called them my fivers. They were there. They did their thing.
These were hardcore groupies.
They were hardcore Bob After Dark fans. Absolutely.
Yeah. I guess groupies, right? Groupies?
I suppose.
Fans?
I saw them all together for like 7 hours.
Yeah.
And I was impressed.
They're out there when you get off the plane. They're all standing by waiting for you to get off the plane.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that was OhioCon in a nutshell. I didn't get to do any of the, I didn't get to go to Char Bar. Usually I'll do the Char Bar or the Art Deco Bar, the haunted bars in the Draft House. Usually I'll go to one of those two when I'm in Columbus, cause it's the haunted bars in the area. I did not even get a chance to do that. I ran around nonstop while I was in Columbus, either bouncing, working the booth I was there with, or doing panels, or just trying to collect myself, man. Cause it was a hectic, nonstop, boom, 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 boom weekend. It was a busy, busy weekend at OhioCon.
But you know, Ohio, one of our finest states of the Union, I would say.
I would argue that we're almost as big as in Ohio as we are in Wisconsin.
Really?
Yeah. Listen, the Ohio crowd absolutely loved us. So shout out to OhioCon and Joey from the panel staff for getting us involved. And once again, this was my third time presenting at OhioCon, second time in person, because last year we did the eHioCon over the virtual stuff.
Yeah.
So this is my second time presenting at that show, and Ohio loves us. So we're officially big in Ohio.
I hear you have a summer home in Ohio.
I will be at some point, I'm sure. Because Columbus loved it, man. They were big fans of the Bob After Dark universe.
From Columbus to Cleveland.
Something. Well, it didn't make it to Cleveland. But no, that's it.
There you go.
Yeah.
Perfect.
And then last week, I was in New York City.
For
my friend Dan's wedding. Asking once again, congratulations, Dan and Caitlin. I know they listen every week. I was out there for his wedding. I was one of his groomsmen. So this time I stayed in Long Island. My first time going out to New York when I didn't actually stay in Manhattan. Usually I go in and I stay in Manhattan. That's like, yeah, obviously the borough you typically stay at, but they live in Long Island. So flew in and I still hung out in Long Island. Now you would think, well, Bob, you're busy with a wedding for the weekend you're there. Can you fit in any paranormal excursions while you're on your trip?
You have to.
The answer is yes. Thanks to Josh Yotter with the New York City Ghostbusters and New York City Ghostbusters Tours. You should look that up because they do tours in New York City of the Ghostbuster filming locations and stuff. Josh knew the location of the Amityville Horror House. Then they've changed the address and they changed the way the house looked.
Okay. Yeah, I want to find out more about this.
So
they
owners,
the way the house looks.
So after Creepypasta Month, we'll do an Amityville Horror House. I promise we'll do that episode. But the current owners and current and past owners of the house, following the incident, right? They have done everything in their power to make the house not distinguishable from what it is, but it's the actual house. So we got there and Josh, we pull up across the street because there's a sign out in front of their house saying no parking, and there's a sign across the street that says no parking. So like we had to park behind the sign, and my buddy Josh, the tour guide's like, you need to get out of this car, get whatever you got to get done. If you want to go across the street, we got to make it quick.
Wow.
And rightfully so. Like I understand where they're coming from. Like these are people that own a home. You don't want people, like, snooping around your property. I get it. I don't want people coming onto my property.
Here's the thing, though, with that, Bob. And I get people shouldn't be on your property. But you know when you buy the Amityville Horror House, that people are going to come look at the house itself. I think it comes with the territory that some folks may have to cross over on your lawn. Not saying it's right, but it shouldn't be shocking to them.
No, that's – so I get where they're coming from. I do. But in the same regard, it's like when, for example, the last time I was in San Francisco, the first and last time I was in San Francisco, they had – somebody recently bought the Full House house. And you had – and this was right when Netflix announced Fuller House, right, when I was there last.
Yeah.
And you had a line of people, like, just going there and taking pictures in front of the house. And people live there. And you could tell them, like, opening up the blinds and looking out and being like, oh, no, there's still people out in front of my house. I get it. I mean, I understand. But for people being across the street from the house, it's arguably, I would say Amityville is in the top five, if not top three, most haunted houses in America. It might even be the most haunted house in America.
Wow.
And it was, you know, so you're going to draw people's attention to the house. And obviously I didn't get to go inside. I almost built up the courage to knock on the door and be like,
oh,
I will give you an undisclosed amount of money. Could I please just wander through your home? I won't take any pictures. you can follow with me. I just want to see inside the house.
I'm sure people have done that before.
And I'm sure. I think I had enough money to probably bribe my way into the house if I wanted to. I didn't want to be that guy. So I did get to hang out in front. And then I did, like, I took the pictures and I did a quick live in front of the house. And then we got a little closer. I got a little bit more courage built up and went in front of the house. And I did get a souvenir.
Really?
I did.
Can you say?
Yeah. I got one of their bushes, one of the Amityville bushes, twigs fell off and was on the ground, like, in front. So all I did, I didn't break it off. I took a twig from where it broke off from, like, the winter. So the original hedge line that, Amityville, I just reached over, right over the wrought iron gate. It was already off. I just pulled it, and it was a little twig about maybe an inch or two long. I just took the twig. This is me stressing this to you guys. Do not go on somebody else's property breaking branches off of people's trees and rocks in their garden. It was laying there almost on the sidewalk in front. So all I did was pick it up. Like I said, I did not break it off. I did not cross their threshold. Do not do that. That is severely wrong. But if it's laying there, you know, you kind of pick it up as you go, right?
Of course. But the thing is, Bob, since you got this twig now, have you been experiencing anything different lately?
Except my pain, which that's not twig related. That's Manhattan's related pain. And I'm talking about the spirit Manhattan, not the island.
Really?
From the wedding, yeah.
Okay.
That made some bad decisions at the wedding, and that's why I'm in pain.
Were you dancing too much?
They had some punk songs playing, which is something I could actually dance to. So I skanked a little bit.
Bob, you know we're 30. You're over 30.
Yeah, I know I'm over. Oh, trust me. I felt it.
You can't be dancing like
that
anymore.
Oh, my God. I woke up the next morning, and my friend, my newly found friend, Francis, one of the groomsmen, gives me a ride back. I woke up, call him, picking me up, and get me back to the airport. Oh, my God. I was like, back in my day, I could drink, you know, a whole night's worth of Manhattans. I had 5 Manhattans at this wedding, and I'm still feeling them 3 days later.
Yeah. Yeah.
And boy, we were doing some two-stepping and some skanking from the punk parts of the songs, and my God, my body feels it. So, but no, I'm not dealing with any kind of problems,
good,
really.
Good. So the twig is just it's not causing you any harm. That's
no,
good.
But I do. I can say I legitimately have something really cool from Amityville, and that's pretty cool.
All right. Well, hey, that sounds like a great trip. But I did see the picture that you posted.
Yeah.
They did change the windows.
They did, and they did that on purpose because the iconic Amityville windows were the bay windows.
Yeah.
You know, the bigger ones. That's the iconic look. So they changed that, but you could tell, like, right away.
Yeah, the house is still
the house. You could tell the shape and everything. So it was really cool to be there.
But how do you change the address, though? I mean, now it's just a different – it's just to throw people off the tracks?
Mm.
Okay.
And there's some rumors saying they rotated the house to try to, like...
I don't know. That's a lot of work.
That is a ton of work. I don't see that. Because it looks like it did, you know?
Yeah.
So I could, you know, for me not being able to go inside, it was still really cool to be there.
No, for sure. Well, glad you had a great time. Again, a little treat, a bonus treat. I mean, you went there for a wedding, and you got to see one of the most famous haunted houses of all time.
Yeah. And that was a cool... That was like a cool, you know, as a paranormal investigator and as a paranormal researcher or whatever for a living, it's really cool to look at that and be like, you know, I did that. Yeah. I got to see Amityville.
You did?
Yeah.
You were there.
I was there. I didn't get to go inside, though.
No.
But no, trust me, if I was just a pinch more courageful, maybe if I had some liquid courage, I probably would have knocked on their door and been like, here's an envelope with a disclosed certain amount of money.
Because there's no gate there?
Oh, they put up it because it never used to be a gate.
Yeah.
Remember, they put I was saying they put up a big wrought iron gate in the front.
So you would have to, like,
you'd have to go.
Gate.
No, there's a side. You could walk around the side.
Oh, okay.
But, like, don't do that. I will tell you that, like, don't go knocking on people's doors. I do it because this is what I do. But if you're just somebody looking for a good time, there are ways to go about going to a haunted location. Contact your local paranormal investigation team. I promise you they probably have some sort of public tour day or something where they let anybody kind of come out. Your local historical society probably does a ghost tour around Halloween. Do one of those. Don't just go knocking on Amityville Doors house, please. I will. Don't. Yeah, I didn't even do
leave
that.
Leave it to you.
Yeah.
Well, good. Fantastic time.
So that's what we got.
Yeah. And now we're back.
Now we're back.
Yeah. They said it couldn't be done.
So what have you been up to, man?
Oh, jeez. Again, snow, a lot of snow in the region.
Oh, I'm tired of it. I'm over it. Like, I saw next week's forecast is already getting in the 40s, and I'm like, I'm happy.
But you see, Bob, you've been here long enough. You
know, we got the fake spring. We got fake spring coming up.
Yeah,
that's
fake
next
spring
week.
Is coming up. In March, spring occurs. Don't be fooled by that. It could snow in March. It get pretty chilly in March.
We could get snow in April and May in Chicago. That is a fact.
You never know.
I've seen it. It was last year. Didn't we get we got like a good coverage. I think it was last year in April, like late April, early May. We got like an inch or two of snow.
We got spoiled a little bit last week. I don't know, you might have been gone already with a 50-degree day.
I had it in New York.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we had a 50-degree day, then boom, right back down the next day.
Yeah. Well, anyway. So I'm done with it. I'm done with the snow. But anyway, go on. What else have you been up
to? I'm trying to recap the whole situation. I think the last time I seen you was,
it's been a couple weeks. It's been three weeks.
But nothing too substantial. Again, chugging along here. Cow Panic is in the region. And
Did you go to 219 Day?
I was at 219 Day.
Did you have a good time?
Let me explain what that is for the folks at home. 219 Day, if you're not from the region, it's our area code, 219.
Yep.
And every year there's a celebration locally here in Hammond, Indiana. Basically, it's an event where people go to drink. And they debate. Then they debate what's really the region. Some folks say these cities and towns are the region. Some folks say these cities are towns and are part of the region. I'm pretty generous with it. I give a big scope of area considering it is the region. And it has a 219 area code. But I did go to that, Bob. I didn't wear my cape, though. I was in disguise as my normal self. But, good time there. And, again, if you don't have to go to this Civic Center to have a great 219 day. You could be anywhere. Heck, the Midwest, the region, just pick up a couple sliders from White Castle, get a Portillo's shake or whatever you need to do, and enjoy yourself, Bob. But other than that, I've been keeping busy.
Well, you ready to dive into the show?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
We should do that.
We should. It's the first time back in a bit.
We know how to do it.
I'm shaking off the rust here, man. I've been doing public appearances. We have another public appearance this Friday at the Dark Matters Podcast Festival in Elgin. We were just discussing that.
I will be along.
You will be. Yes. You will be at. You confirmed.
Because it's we state this too. It's tough for me to travel like you do.
Yeah.
Ohio, New York. I got to work. I got to make a living. But when it's close enough, I will make the appearance and we'll be there this
Friday.
And
that's any Chicago Con guys that are here or something, even in Indianapolis, Panic could come out to. It's just harder to get Panic out to things like Columbus on a drop of a hat.
A different state, yeah.
But either way, if this is your first time ever watching or listening to Bob After Dark, we are a weekly, as I like to say it, a weekly paranormal. We do our best. Weekly paranormal podcast where we talk about legends, lore, and supernatural, things that go bump in the night, lights in the sky, and, of course, Count Panic's favorite beer.
Ooh. For the Wisconsin folks at home,
Spotted Cow. Ooh, that's a good one. That's a good one.
It might be that's pretty high.
That's a positive. Would you like to know mine?
What is it?
PBR Extra.
I know PBR, but what's PBR Extra?
It's just PBR with an extra kick of taste to it.
Really?
Not the coffee, not the seltzer. It's PBR still, but comes in a black can.
I don't think I ever had PBR Extra.
You have to, like, I've never seen it, like, out here before. Up by the brewery in Milwaukee, I've seen it, like, in Wisconsin and Northern Illinois, and I've even seen it in, like, the Spines and stuff.
So it's just higher content?
It's a little bit higher at content, but the taste is actually better than PBR.
Really?
And that says a lot because I'm a connoisseur, if you will. I do enjoy a good beer once in a while. But I want PBR Extra, man. It's just that's my favorite beer of all time.
But it's not available everywhere, though.
I've never seen it. I'm sure somebody out there is gonna be like, "Oh yeah, Bob, I saw PBR Extra at my fill in the blank liquor store." And, yeah, dude, try it. Seriously, I highly recommend it.
Keep it in mind.
You know, let's dive into one of my favorite parts of the show, because we usually split the show up into two parts.
Yeah.
The first part, we talk about weird stuff in the news. It's the weird, spooky stuff in the news. These are weird advances in science fiction, or if there's a strange news article relating to the paranormal, cryptid sighting, anything like that, or, you know, saying, like, advances in science that borderline on science fiction, so weird discoveries, et cetera, et cetera. You know, we talk about these news stories, and then the second part, we do the lore of the week. Well, the first part, we're diving into the news part.
Okay.
And as we are recording the show, it is February 2nd, 2022, or 020222.
Today,
or 2222.
22.
Yes.
Yes.
Now,
on Tuesday.
On Tuesday. I know a lot of people were excited about Taco Tuesday, getting two tacos on 222, right?
Yeah.
That's fine and dandy. Clever. What if I told you there was a Bob After Dark meaning behind 222, a spookier, interesting metaphysical meaning behind the numeral meaning of this date that we're recording? Because we are recording on this date.
Yeah.
And it's significant because of this.
Big day.
All right. So I'm reading this. It's astrologers are explaining the power shift significance of 222 for the U.S., This is in the NY Post, written by Brad Hamilton, and I will read it as such. We've had a few palindrome days recently, including 12-22-21, but when written up in British fashion, 22-20-22, it's both a palindrome, a phrase or number that's the same frontwards and backwards, like Madam, I'm Adam, or race car, or taco cat.
Taco cat.
Yes. And at least one and on a calculator, an ambrium, which reads the same upside down and right side up, which is also fascinating. A longtime Manhattan numerologist sees this day as an opportunity for new beginnings. Celtic Seer, a native of Ireland who does readings online, said all those twos must be added to the divine their significance. In numerology, you reduce, she said. So 2, 22, 2022. Adds up to 12, so all those twos.
Okay.
Then you add the 1 and the 2 together to get 3, and that number 3 is important after the 1 and 2, so it reforms the sequence. It's like a new beginning and also self-expression. That's a very powerful tool. As for what this evening is supposed to bring, during this broadcast right now, you're expanding outward, bringing more elements into your sphere. It's an opportunity for those who choose to do so. There's always going to be pain and learning, but there's a light at the end of the tunnel. And if you don't see that light, Ruby Tuesdays is offering a $2 mini margarita and beer. It also turns out today's National Margarita Day.
How about that combination?
It is. Astrologers also say that the United States will experience its first Pluto return. In this case, the first time the planet, which is associated with transformation and power, will come back in the position it was when the Declaration of Independence was signed and ratified on July 4th, 1776. As a result, they predict a radical power shift. According to horoscope.com writer Sharon Campbell, Pluto returns in France and Russia mark the deaths of Napoleon and Stalin. Spanish dictator Francisco Franco relinquished power during Spain's last Pluto return. Some even argue that UK's last Pluto return coincides with the unofficial fall of the former world empire. Historically, this time is marked with a lot of change, and most believe that the US debt will be no different, Campbell told the New York Post. For Jules Zia Passel, tomorrow of this date is something that she's been eagerly anticipating since childhood. Born in 2000, she will turn 22 on 2/22/22. And it's been the birthday I waited for. I didn't care about my 21st at all, she told the Washington Post. My whole life I've been trying to find meaning for it, and I'm still searching. But one expert demanded expectations. Tuesday, as they're calling this, carries absolutely no historical significance or any cosmic message, posted Barry Murkowski, a sociology professor at the University of South Carolina. Yet it does speak volumes about our brains and cultures. I say, Mr. Murkowski, let people have fun. Murkowski, who describes himself as a social psychologist who studies paranormal claims and pseudosciences, discounts popular interpretations about such things as a bunch of twos piling up on the calendar. They are nearly as absurd from scientific perspective, but they're great for illustrating how our brains, people, and cultures work together and create shared meaning. Hashtag panic steak.
You know, I did hear some about some of that whole Pluto situation. When you think about that, Bob, that how rare is that? How often could that occur? I know we talk about, you know,
they're
the significance of 2/22/22/22, but the fact that the last time this happened was 1776 and Pluto's returning back into the atmosphere, how wild is that?
It's pretty wild. Well, I mean, it's not in the atmosphere. It's just
it's coming down here, Bob.
It's just the way it's aligned. It's not crashing into Earth before we start causing a mass panic, no pun intended.
Yeah, you never know, but it's rotating around us or something.
Yeah, it's in the vicinity. It's in sight.
And Mercury is in retrograde?
I don't think it is. I think we just ended that.
And the veil is at its thinnest?
No, it's not. Oh, but let me keep talking for a second. Let me see.
Well, again, there's a lot of situation, a lot of ins and outs to this whole situation here. But, yeah, I mean, people are taking it for a fun little holiday, bonus holiday we're having here. But yet there's some impactful meaning behind it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To answer your question, no, Mercury is not in current retrograde.
Oh.
I think it's Venus. Mercury is not in retrograde until May 10th.
Okay.
So May 10th, Mercury gets back into retrograde.
And Pluto is a planet.
Pluto is. I believe they declared it a planet again.
Yes.
But Pluto's within this thing. Now is the time. I know our podcast fans are going to miss out on this. Get your intentions out there, man. When I drove into the studio today, I put out all my intentions despite my very tired demeanor. Even though I slept a long time, I know this the Pluto thing's affecting some people's moods. It's definitely affecting mine. But I will tell you, get your intentions out there. It's exactly what I'm doing.
Yeah.
This is a very powerful moment in the world. And to that gentleman who's doing the bashing of the two Tuesday,
what's the problem?
Let people have fun.
People have fun.
It's, yeah, I will.
Margarita Day?
It is Margarita Day. I will tell you 100%, I am not a numerologist.
No.
I am not. I wouldn't even go as far as saying I dabble. To be completely honest, I know the bare minimum when it comes to numerology. It's not something I focus on too much, to be completely frank with you. I have a couple books on the subject, like, so if something comes up and I need to research it, I have something quick that I can open up and make a reference to.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm not a very good numerologist by any means. We got to call her. Let's just take it live.
We're going to take it live on the air.
I have a feeling it's John because I haven't spoke to John in a couple of weeks. You're on the air, listener.
Hey, take it live, Bob. Hey, where the heck you been, man?
Now, you see, John, we went through this whole explanation. I've been on the road, Columbus, New York, and snow is keeping me at home.
Yeah, I heard you, but you know what? I'm not on social media, so I can't follow you. So we're going to have to find some way to keep in touch.
Man, if only you were related. If only you were related. If you only were related to somebody on my production staff.
I'm kind of stuck in the 50s like my brother. He don't have a cell phone. He don't have a computer. He don't have cable TV.
Count Panic,
some of that stuff, but I don't have social. I'm not on social media.
Not social media.
Count Panic, why can't we? Should probably. I think there's somebody we can get in touch with at the studio that can let John know we're not on.
We'll find somebody.
But anyway, John, what's on your mind? Thanks for calling. We missed you.
Yeah, well, nobody has to tell me. I just put it on, and if there's a basketball game on, you know, hey, But hey, happy 222-22 Margarita Day. But you know, I'm always intrigued listening to your show. You know that, right, Bob?
Oh, I know that, John.
But you know what kind of really floored me is that your favorite beer is Pabst Blue Ribbon.
I love, and people make fun of me, John, because I do.
No,
like
wait,
I said,
no, wait, hold on. You know, I'm not making fun. I didn't. I'll be honest with you. I didn't even know that was still being felt.
It is. There's a whole culture behind people who drink PBR.
Really? Yeah,
and I drink the I like the PBR Extra to be an exact. By the way, folks, this is a quick disclaimer. Don't drink unless you're of age. Thanks.
There you go.
You mean you could actually go, again, I'm serious. You could actually go into anybody, you know, establishment and they'll have that on tap or
on tap is a delicacy. There's only two bars I know of in Northwest Indiana that have it on tap.
They have cans though, right?
Most places have cans. And even harder to find than that is the bottles. I've only seen a couple grocery stores that cans are common. You could go to any liquor store and they'll have PBR by the can. On tap, it's very rare. I've only seen it at a handful of bars. But I do. But no, that's my favorite.
Yeah, and I don't recall your dad ever being a PBR drinker at Sardi's.
You know, no, old Bob Anderson Sr. enjoyed MGD and Old Style.
Old Style was the big one.
I still enjoy an Old Style, too. I'm a Chicago boy, so that's, yeah.
Well, like I said, that kind of stumped me when you said PBR. I said, well, I didn't even know they still make
it. It's
that,
kind of hip, though, to like PBR. Right?
It's a hipster thing. Yeah. People call me the hipster all the time, but I like PBR. It's good beer.
Yeah, well, it doesn't have nothing to do with the paranormal.
It
does. To throw a few things at you. Welcome you back, most of all. And, you know, nice to hear you back on the airwaves again.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for calling in, John.
Okay, Bob. Take care.
Thank you.
Yeah, PBR is very, for the past 10 years, exploded with the cult crowd.
By the way, 219-845-1100. You can call in and say hello.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'd appreciate hearing from you.
We're here live on 222-2222.
Yes, that certain lawyer. We can't mention his name legally because he doesn't sponsor us, but there's a
I met him once.
Did you really? Yeah. You should tell him to sponsor the show.
Okay.
But no, like I was saying before the call, I'm not a numerologist. There are people that are in-depth studying with that stuff because that, to be completely frank with you, that sign of the occult, I'm just going to use that term really loosely, that side of the occult, astronomy, numerology, angelic signs, things like that, I am not that kind of practitioner by any means. I know tarot and divination, things like that, but when it comes to astrology and star charts and all that stuff, I'm not the best person. Like, don't sit down and ask me to come up with your star chart. I will stare at you blankly. Just like if you ask me the power of your birthday numbers, I might know a little bit. That's the one thing. Like, I get it. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. And I mean, it's something I could get you an answer to. And, you know, repetition and numbers and stuff. I know there's certain things that hold power, like number 7 holds power, number 3 holds power. I understand that. But outside of that, I am not a numerologist.
And I've never gotten to that or to. And kind of the same kind of what we're talking about as far as Pluto, like the horoscopes as well. I never got deep into the horoscopes. I know a lot of people are out there read the horoscopes. They could deep dive into the horoscopes, but I never really got the really what got what it's all about, Bob. Maybe I'm just missing out here.
What's your sign?
I'm a Taurus there. Just the tail end of it, May 19th.
And Taurus goes into what? So you're like the cusp of
I don't know what's
after
Taurus.
Yeah,
I only know me.
You don't come across as a Taurus, though.
I don't know. I don't think
like
so.
You are.
But
your moon's probably in Virgo or something, man. Because you are such a Virgo. At the end of the day, like 1,000,000%, you are a Virgo.
I'm a retrograde. I'm in retrograde right now, I think.
Are you
Taurus in retrograde?
A Taurus in retrograde.
I don't even know what Mercury in retrograde even means, Bob. But I think a cartoon character used to say it, right? Snagglepuss. But do you know heavens to retrograde?
Megatron?
I'm mixing everything.
Megatron, the Transformer?
Yeah.
You don't act like a Taurus, though. That's strange.
See, here's the thing. I don't believe in that horoscope stuff because I don't think.
Oh, you don't?
Because I don't think.
You believe in numerology. Do you think there's power in numbers?
I don't get it.
But there's a lot of things we talk about on the show that you don't get.
Yeah.
But as far as numerology, do you understand the baseline of it? Like, there's power behind the numbers.
I've heard about that before. I
do you believe there? Do you have any belief in it?
No, not really.
I do. I honestly. Again, you have to understand, running a show like what we do, I have to understand how things work, and I, you know, there's certain things I believe and there's certain things I don't. I do believe there's meaning behind things, and I do believe that there's power in numbers, repetition in threes, why the brain picks up on that and understands that better than like groupings of twos or fours. I think there's something to it.
It's a magic number.
It is.
Yeah.
But we're not talking about threes. We're talking about twos.
Well, it's also a magic number, I guess. One is the loneliest number. I know that, though.
The one numerology rule, you know.
And two can be as bad as, well, you know, the rest.
Yeah. But no, that's fascinating. I'm glad you shared that with me.
Horoscopes, man.
All right. I would have pinned you as a Virgo. Like, I know your birthday, but your moon's got to be a Virgo.
I guess
Virgo.
I can switch.
Because you are a Virgo through and through.
I don't know what that means, but thank you.
I'm a Libra. And some people tell me outright, they're like, oh, you are Libra 100%.
What's a Libra characteristic?
Constant balance in flux.
Oh.
Like, I am in a constant state of trying to battle, like, balance. I want to have things in life that, you know,
yeah,
leveled out, you know what I mean?
I hear you.
Yeah, no, there are people that will totally dive into that stuff, too, 1,000,000%. But anyway, you want to move on?
Yeah.
All right. So our next story comes to us from Explorers, which is Infinity Explorers. It's kind of like a paranormal blog website. They have a story here written from from Katsbua Crowdhari. Pardon me if I misenunciate the name. Somebody posted this in one of the paranormal groups I'm in, and I just saw it, and I thought it was fascinating. I have no validity to proving the story is true or not, but we're going to tell it anyway.
Okay.
And the story is about Mike Markham, the man who vanished after inventing a time machine. A man from Stanbury, Missouri, United States, named Mike the Madman Markham, sounds like a professional wrestler, made an attempt to construct a fully functional time machine on his porch. He started with working on a contraption called the Jacob's Ladder. Jacob's Ladder is a device that reduces air resistance between two poles, and using a modified compact disc laser, whose result would be a continuous arc. On turning on the device, he spotted something abnormal. He saw there was a heat mark identical to the one would notice on a hot footpath, but it was a vortex shape and was circular. So he made up his mind to test the effect of throwing a screw made up of sheet metal through the vortex in order to see what would happen. As a result, the screw disappeared for a half a second and later reappeared a few feet away. Markham was 21 years old at the time and was pursuing a course related to electricity when he was going to school. He's a brilliant student, intelligent, and comparative to his fellow mates. The reason why Markham wanted to build a time machine so that he can get the winning lottery numbers for the future. 1,000%, this is a side Bob Anderson piece. It's why every person wants to time travel.
Oh, yeah.
However, Markham was confronted with the issue of requiring a large amount of power supply in order for the time machine to function effectively. The CD laser caught fire almost after a few seconds after the first few trials. He figured out he needed to use a large transformer to rebuild the machine. He intended to purchase new transformers, but they were rather expensive. So he changed his mind and stole 6 transformers worth more than £300,000 from St. Joseph Light and Power Generating Station in King City. He caused a power failure, which resulted in a total blackout of several blocks throughout his neighborhood while he was testing his experiments. As a result, he was found guilty of stealing transformers and was arrested a few months later after the blackout on January 29th, 1995, by the Gentry County Sheriff Eugene Lupfer. After completing his jail sentence for several months, Markham was released with and was invited to speak on Coast to Coast Radio, hosted by Art Bell at the time, as a guest where he told the story of the screw and had plans to build a time machine. He also vowed that this time he will do it the legal way. In the radio show, Markham told him that he still wants to try the experiment but lacks resources, which include both money and spare parts. During the interview, he publicly told the mobile number told his mobile number because of what she received nonstop calls for 3 days. Many listeners contacted Markham as they wanted to help him with funds, ideas, and spare parts. The bits of help and donations made his project more powerful, and the level of the project was much bigger at this time compared to earlier. This time he wanted to test the time machine on himself, so he increased the power from the engine from a kilowatt to 3 megawatts, which is a lot. From the little bit I know about, like, the electrical planes and stuff, that's a lot of power.
What was it, Back to the Future? Gigawatts?
1.21 gigawatts. But anyway, to make the experiment more effective and more efficient, he also installed a rotating magnetic field similar to what the U.S. military in the Philadelphia experiment. A year later, Mike was again invited as a guest by Art Bell, where Mike claimed that this time he experimented with more advanced and more sophisticated time machine. I guess not something he just built on his front porch in his free time. Also, this time the electromagnetic vortex was big enough for a man to walk into. At the end of the interview, Markham claimed that he was on the verge of generating the desired amount of voltage required to run the machine. On getting asked what he would take from him, what it would take with him, Mike replied that he would just take his cell phone. Now, instead of his phone number, he gave his address. In 1996, during the second interview, which was also his last, Mike said that it was just 30 days away from completing his legal time machine. Mike Markham disappeared in 1997, was never found. A stranger later called Art Bell to report a strange story that he found. According to the story, his dead body of a man was found on the California beach in the 1930s. The dead body was mysteriously crushed in a strange metal tube, and the face was in an unrecognizable state. And a strange device was also found next to the dead body. The device was reported to be similar to what looked like a cell phone. And the reason why I'm bringing up the story, you know, 20 years later, almost 30 years later, is that it's on the anniversary of his last time talking to Art Bell is coming up.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
So, story goes, he built this time machine, didn't make it, but apparently there was a body found in the 1930s in California.
Hmm.
So that's the story, hashtag.
So that really, at the end of the day, it really makes you think of what actually did happen there. The whole thing about the lottery situation as well. I know we're just talking about numbers, Bob. Now, I do believe in terms of lottery, if you don't randomize your numbers and you do pick your own numbers, you should stick with the same numbers every time. A side note, I would stick with the same numbers every time.
Do you play the lottery every week?
No, I don't play every week. But if I did play when I do play the lottery, I just let them pick the numbers for me.
That's how I do it. I don't buy. I only probably dive into the lottery when, you know, you get those big jackpots.
Oh,
and it's just
and
like,
that's probably the worst.
And I give like a $5, you know, it's like $5, yeah. Whatever, right?
You got to buy it when nobody's playing it.
I guess that's fair.
When it's not popular to play it. But, yeah, it's fascinating. But it makes you really think about time travel and what you could do with it. And, yeah, for the most part, 95% of people would play the lottery and get those numbers and then go back and win. So
again, I know the story's a little old, but it's the anniversary coming up. Yeah. And that's, you know, sometimes on the show we have to look at things that are relevant and very something that still stands out as far as popular stories are concerned and the stuff we talk about. And in this case, this is one of those stories that I think transcends time, no pun intended.
Yeah.
Did you know about this story prior to me telling it?
I did not, Bob.
I'm sure Jack probably somewhere knew that story.
He was the one time traveling.
Maybe Jack might be that guy.
If there's a guy out there that could time travel, I think it would be Jack.
All right. You ready for the last story?
Yeah.
Okay. This one comes to us from The Mirror, written by Rosaline Fenton. Title of the article goes, "A woman rejected from wedding venues because, guess what?
What?
She's marrying a ghost."
Oh. Yeah.
Brocarde, I believe that's how you pronounce her name, Brocarde. I'm not hip. Do you know who that is? She's a singer.
Say it again?
Brocarde, Brocarde.
Can't say I'm too hip either.
Brocarde, she's 38 years old and a singer and songwriter from Oxfordshire, first fell in love with Eduardo, the ghost of a Victorian soldier, last year after he appeared in her home. A singer set to marry a ghost has revealed the plans for their wedding day, but says she's been threatened with exorcisms by prospective venues. Are you following me so far?
I'm following you.
Brocade, 38, a singer and songwriter from Oxfordshire, has spoken numerous obstacles that she faces to marry her partner Eduardo, the ghost of a Victorian soldier. They met last year after he first appeared in a home, and they are now set to wed despite the struggles to find a suitable property to marry in. Eduardo and I are currently arguing over the wedding date, Brocardi said. I want a summer wedding, but he hates the heat, and I'd secretly love to make him melt, but he disappears often enough as it is. For weeks, we got nowhere with it. But I'm going to design an Ouija board of wedding dates to see which we are both drawn to. I swear he has turned into a complete groomzilla, and his demands grow daily, according to this the singer. Eduardo's always temperamental by nature, but this closer to the wedding dates are bringing out the worst in him. The pair communicate through unique methods, with sending ghost cryptic messages in the shower. We have to remember to stay PG, folks. She said Eduardo still leaves subliminal messages in the shower and shows his emotions by sending hot and cold water changes. We'll just say that.
Okay.
Whatever it is I need to ask of him, he always finds a way of communicating back. It doesn't just lay in the perimeters of what people classify as normal, but who wants to be normal? It could be very difficult for a human to marry a ghost with a couple shunned from churches believe that the romance is blasphemous. Brocade said, finding the venue has been providing to be very tricky. We've been kicked out of a couple churches and been threatened with an exorcism already. I want a huge white wedding, but a lot of people just can't see the vision. Eduardo has made a few appearances, but there's an overwhelming sense that he doesn't feel comfortable in churches. It's far too risky for him. She claims to have had fascinating discussions about religion and the paranormal with priests, but believes the church cannot publicly endorse such beliefs. She added, I refuse to consider any typical rules and boundaries, and this isn't a typical romance. I've applied a DIY mentality to everything. I've even designed my own wedding dress, which pays homage to the Victorian era. Eduardo has insisted that I make him a Victorian three-piece suit, and I've around a few ideas, but ultimately I just can't see it. I'd prefer him to surprise me pulling a morning suit from his old wardrobe. The guest list is difficult to nail down, with many of Eduardo's friends no longer alive and his best man stuck in hell. We'll just say it. He's okay. Stuck in hell.
Wow.
The couple is also inviting some celebrities of ghosts. Marilyn Monroe, Elvis, and The Bard are all on the guest list. She said, my dream is to have an eclectic combination of souls at the wedding. I have a blatant disregard to wherever they classify as alive or dead at this point. It seems barely relevant. We're going to invite our favorite historical characters such as Elvis and Marilyn Monroe. William Shakespeare would be warmly welcome, particularly if he's reading a sonnet, so as long as he doesn't reenact Hamlet on my special day. I don't have 4 hours to spare for someone else's drama. Eduardo desperately wants one of his fellow soldiers to be his best man, but apparently he went to hell in 1875 for running an opium den, of all things. And I guess this character hasn't been reached ever since. Eduardo proposed bat last November in 2021, and I thought I was dreaming, and then I fell back asleep, and I awoke, and the ring was gone, as the person said during the dream they had of being proposed to. And he's really pushing on the edge of creativity and challenges me to be an open mind to a whole new world. And guess what they did on Valentine's Day?
What'd they do?
they have steamy plans ahead during the time of them planning. And she admits that one will be left out of the pocket. That's all she had to write about the Valentine's Day's plans. I don't know. I skipped around this article because it gets really long.
Yeah.
I'm going to let you have the Panic's take on this. Well, but I... Brocade.
Okay.
If you hear this, if somebody in the universe can get this message to them, I need to be on the guest list for this wedding. I need to be on the guest list for this wedding. I also need the Ouija board that she made in order to communicate the wedding dates. I need it.
Here's the thing, Bob.
Okay.
One, I think Elvis is still alive somewhere. So
that there's a conspiracy.
Yeah,
about
I don't
that.
Know if he could be associated with this wedding just yet. Two, do you save money? They don't have to pay for these ghosts, right? The ghosts get in for free? Or do you have to pay for each ghost that shows up?
I am assuming they're not paying for a plate.
That's what I'm saying, Bob. So depending on what you believe in, you save money with that. But you know what? I say invite them. What's the worst that could happen? They don't show up?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the worst that could happen is they don't show up. And if they do show up, great. Your wedding is what you wanted it to be. But, again, a very expansive guest list, a very eclectic guest list, and I hope they get all those folks there.
We need to get invited to this wedding.
How hard can it be?
I also need to interview this person. Now, typically, we do these stories about folks falling in love with ghosts. Remember the pirate ghost person?
Yeah.
We couldn't find them for an interview.
No.
This is a singer and a songwriter.
Is this like a famous person? Or
I don't know.
I never heard of this one.
I don't know. I'm going to send this over to you.
Yeah, I'll see.
You need to cook up whatever ability you have.
I'll pull some strings.
You're going to have to pull every string you have available to you in order for us to not only get invited to this wedding, because we need to be at this wedding.
What kind of gift would you get the couple like this?
Wherever they're registered. I don't know. I don't really care because I'm treating this exactly serious. I'm not joking.
No.
This is the wedding of the century.
Of the century. Okay.
This is the wedding.
Yeah.
And I need to be present for it. I need to witness this.
I mean, what would you do? I mean, you have to make conversation with Elvis and Beethoven and...
I don't know.
Shakespeare.
Well, you and I are about to sit down and figure out what we're going to have to do because we're getting invited to this wedding. I'm sending
right,
you over.
I'll see what I can do.
Okay.
All right.
And in the very least, I want to interview this person because I'm not making fun of them. A million percent.
No.
Like, I'm a million percent serious. I appreciate somebody in the public light that can step forward and have this, you know, feeling, etc. But, like, I need this in my life. We need to go to this wedding.
Okay.
Okay, and I need to talk to this person. I'm sending you over the story, and I'll be posting this on Children of the Night for you guys to take a peek yourselves.
Perfect.
All right, Count Panic?
Yeah.
Ready to take a quick break?
Sure.
All right, folks, it's a little late in the show, but we had a long catching up to do. Folks, stay tuned. You're about to hear some words from a podcast you should be listening to, and for our live audience, stay tuned. We will be right back.
Hey, true believers and new believers, this is Dr. David Hickney. I am a PhD in cryptozoology from MIT, and I'm the host of Freak of the Week. What's Freak of the Week? It's a podcast where people can call in to talk about all the crazy creatures and phenomena that are out there. Join me, my co-host, Dr. Elizabeth Marin, who may or may not be my sister. Spoiler, she is my sister, as we discuss such amazing topics like the ghost of Dave Coulier, the lost city of Miami, aliens, feline warriors, and much, much more. Freak of the Week comes out every week, hence the name, on Fridays. See you then.
And we're back.
Yeah.
Hi there.
How's it going, Bob?
Hi, Count Panic. How
are
you?
What did you do during break?
I'm prepping for this ghost wedding.
Okay.
Me and the Queen of the Night are already prepping my makeup, get up, and going to dress me up as one of the ghosts.
Are you going to dress up as one of the ghosts?
I'm going to dress up as a ghost.
As a ghost,
I will be Victorian goth ghost.
There you go.
That's my attire.
Yeah.
And what did you do?
During the break, Bob? I found some PBR extra, and I ordered 10 cases. No, scratch that. 12 cases.
You ordered 12 cases?
For the wedding.
Oh.
Because you can't go to a wedding by yourself. You got to bring a gift with you to the wedding. And I don't know what these people, they want a blender? No, just bring some PBR extra.
I don't know. Whatever they have on the registry.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to dwell on the story forever. Like, I read the story, but, you know, I always read the stories prior to doing them because I got to see if it's, you know, worth mentioning. Yeah. But that is the single greatest. That might be my favorite story we've ever covered on this in our couple of years of doing Bob After Dark. Like, that is my favorite story,
story
we've ever done.
Yeah.
100%. Okay. Anyway, moving on. It's Creepypasta Month, despite us not seeing each other for pretty much the entire month. So we got two episodes left. We might do an extra episode in the Creepypasta Month just because this is, in fact, my favorite month of the year to do episodes. Mm-hmm. This and Failure Month being our oldest tradition of theme months. Creepypasta Month, something we did last year starting. But it's so much fun because creepypastas typically are fiction. They're typically a piece of something that never happened, but it's fun to have modern horror stories that inspire people's paranormal beliefs in the future. So things like Slender Man we talked about last year during Creepypasta Month. Are you paying attention to me?
Yeah.
All right. Something like you just looked like you were staring off into the distance.
Yeah, I'm looking at the screen here. There's something kind of eerie going on.
What's going on?
Nothing technical, but like by you.
What do you mean?
Not like there's someone floating. Might be a glitch in the It might be a glitch in the TV, though. Maybe those Elvis ghosts are coming in.
Hopefully that's Eduardo sending me my invite, man. That's what I'm waiting for. But I digress.
Yes.
So, I like the idea that these things are potent. These things are things that we can use to further our paranormal and ghost stories in the future, right? And during Creepypasta Month, we like to highlight some of the ones, the good, the bad, the popular. And it typically is the more popular the story. The okay it is, and sometimes they're really bad. Last time we talked about Sonic.exe2, which is our 100th episode, by the way. Sonic.exe2 was much better than Sonic.exe1. Still made me feel really dumb about reading it out loud because the stupidest protagonists I've ever met.
Well, the whole thing with the whole thing with that is like the crowd gets a big kick out of those episodes, too. I mean,
yes.
The Sonic Creepypasta Sonic. What more do you want in life?
You're not wrong.
No.
So we're going to be talking about, I would argue, outside of Slender Man, this is the most popular creepypasta of all time.
Okay.
And that is Jeff the Killer.
Jeff the Killer.
Jeff the Killer. Not necessarily a spookier, I mean, it is spooky, but it's not necessarily a, Slender Man level horror, but we'll continue. Jeff the Killer was written originally on August 12th, 2012.
Okay.
Folks, there's going to be a little bit of trigger warning here. There's some violence involved with this one. So I'll be as gentle as I can be on this. So originally written on the Something Awful boards, Jeff the Killer is up there with Slender Man as the type of character. You see his imagery is one of the more famous creepypasta images you've ever seen. Maybe you've seen it's the person with the white face, the blacked out eyes with just the one pupil, the pupils in the front, and then the Joker-esque smile across the face with the raggedy black hair. Story goes as follows. You wake up at 3 a.m., disturbed by some subtle shifting sound within the room. Just on the edge of hearing, propping up on one arm, you survey the room, looking for the source of the noise, hoping beyond hope that you won't find one. At first, your hopes are raised. Everything seems to be silent. Everything seems to be still. But it isn't. From behind the long concealing drape of the curtain of a voice with a flickering serpentine hiss whispers, "Go to sleep." Suddenly, you know what's about to happen and exactly who is waiting to meet you. As recognizable and widely as he's feared, Jeff the Killer is the villain of numerous stories littering the internet, is one of the most widely reference creepypasta characters of all time. And this is written right off the creepypasta website, creepypasta.com. Firstly, for those unfamiliar with the character of Jeff the Killer, the most widely known creepypasta character, one of, other than Slenderman, I'd argue, the story is usually linked to the version of the image of what we were talking about a little bit before, and noseless face, bleached white skin, long, leering, permanent grin, and lengthy black hair. For just a quick overview of what Jeff the Killer is, as a 13-year-old, Jeff, or Jeffrey Allen Woods, or Jeff C. Hodick, depending upon who you ask, moves with his parents and brother Louis to a new town. Here, Jeff and his sibling encounter three bullies that threaten them with knives. As it always goes back to like that bully trope in high school of kids always having knives. Jeff beats these bullies badly, with Louis taking the blame for the assault and being carted off to the ever-reliable police. Guilt and ridden and depressed of having Louis take the blame for his actions, Jeff's day gets even worse when he meets the bullies again and is horribly burnt in an attack with alcohol and bleach. This burning results in Jeff being permanently disfigured, his skin bleached white, and physically his mind just snaps after that. Upon being discharged for some reason, the doctors apparently attributing Jeff's insane behavior to the painkillers he's taking, Jeff arrives home and proceeds to make a bad situation worse by mutilating his already disfigured face, cutting a permanent smile into his lips and cheeks, and burning his eyelids so that you can always see his face. Jeff then kills both of his parents and his brother Louis, meeting him with the instruction, "Go to sleep," before stabbing him and disappearing onto a wider, less discriminating killing spree, which would seem to continue to this day. Back to the Creepypasta website. According to Creepypasta explanations, Jeff's fixed grin is due to scarring he inflicted upon himself. His eyes stared widely because they were burnt off of his eyelids and his skin was lily white as a result from horribly being burnt by bullies with a combination of alcohol and bleach. The photograph, that's a very popular JPEG that goes around the internet, that many believe that Jeff Killer actually looks like, and which would looks like a cross between Michael Jackson and a demented dolphin, is widely known not only from the creepypastas using the character, but by its widespread use in screamer videos along with Jeff's famous catchphrase, "Go to sleep." Mm-hmm. Much like the old maze game when it would pop up the picture of the Exorcist, you get to the little edge of the maze and it would just pop up and scream. Many different games use that image of Jeff the Killer with the image "Go to sleep" and it'll pop up and scare the crap out of you. There is no screamers during the podcast, folks. I appreciate it. As with many creepypasta characters, there seems to have been an element to the Jeff the Killer's creation. Well, now, whilst most won't look at the image of Jeff the Killer and regard it as art, it is commonly agreed that the image upon which the story of Jeff the Killer is based on predates the making up of the story, meaning that the creators began with the creepy image and went from there. So the Jeff the Killer image predated the Jeff the Killer story itself.
Yeah.
Not a whole lot is known about the image, but the image, its origin, has developed a mythology all of its own, with various competing theories and bogus explanations being put forward. The first noted appearance of the famous image is all the way back in 2005 from a Japanese message board. The later appeared in a Japanese YouTube video, NNN, kanji, 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 a clip identified by some as a scary film project, in which names and ages of future victims are listed. The video is uploaded in August 2007 and features a glimpsing of the Jeff the Killer image, which can be seen on screen for 4 minutes 11 second mark, followed by the words "good night," which may be an early incarnation for the famous "go to sleep" catchphrase that Jeff is associated with. That this video, without a backstory or explanation, existed before the story or even the name Jeff the Killer surfaced, seems to confirm that it was indeed the image from the image that came first. The association with the image named Jeff the Killer, a related title, came in 2008, when a user on the forum Newgrounds uploaded the image and using the name Killer Jeff with the somewhat dubious claim that the image was a self-portrait depicting him. Mm. Shortly following the first association of the photograph with a name, the first incarnation of anything resembling a story of Jeff the Killer, and the image combined as one, was a video uploaded by a user, Cessor, on October 3rd, my birthday, 2008, with some sources claiming that Cessor and the previous Newgrounds uploader Jeff the Killer were the same exact person. And the later creepypasta incarnations of Jeff the Killer, upon which the synopsis we talked a little bit about before, has a convoluted history. Despite being very popular, the original version of Jeff the Killer in 2011 was described by many ways of being weakly told and low quality, and many insisting that the story did not meet the quality of assurance that the standards of the places this thing was being posted to.
Yeah.
You see, Slender Man was being posted to something awful, forum boards for the spooky monster stuff. And Jeff the Killer was a creature, as a character that people wrote a lot of stories about because it was a popular thing and there were a lot of games. And because of that, the quality of the stories dropped, so people were giving him a lot of flack. And then Jeff the Killer became this extremely popular character in, like, the indie video game scene. And people made a lot of video games based on Jeff the Killer himself, too, which is really strange. But the main story always begins with an expert from a local newspaper on this known killer is still at large. And they always talk in the newspaper article in the original story, because we went over the synopsis, but they always talk about these people sleeping in their bedrooms and they wake up to noises in their bed, and then they hear a whisper, "Go to sleep." And then they wake up and they see some version of Jeff the Killer.
It's Jeff the Killer.
I think Jeff the Killer is a very interesting story, all bite short, and keep in mind that people have written many a sequel and their own variation on Jeff. I prefer what I believe Jeff the Killer was inspired by to begin with the large mouth and the kind of grotesque-looking face, and that is the Japanese yokai Kuchisake Onna.
I believe I've seen this before.
Well, it's a popular ghost story out of Japan. The Kuchisake Onna, instead of saying would go to sleep, she would lure people in the streets with a face that was covered up by a mask, and if she approached you in the street, she would remove the mask and say something like, "Do you think I'm beautiful?" And you see this grotesque face with this ripped, carved smile, just like Jeff the Killer. And if you say something like yes, then she will carve the smile into your face as well. It's the same concept, except I think the Kuchisake Onna is a little bit more of a potent story. Okay. It actually caused a little bit more of a cultural phenomena. Whereas I think Jeff the Killer is just a popular creepypasta that I think is only really big here. And I think it falls flat on the popularity like we see with, you know, a character like Slender Man.
Okay.
What's your take on Jeff the Killer?
No, again, it's one of those terrifying creepypastas. But you're right. I do, because I've been kind of hip in the video game circuit, Bob. But
oh, you're hip.
A little different, I guess, than the Slender Man, which I'm more probably aware of than
the... Did you know Jeff the Killer prior to us sitting down for this episode?
I know what it looks like, but I forgot that the name associated with it was Jeff the Killer. But now that you bring up the whole backstory of the kind of the origin of what it's based off of, I could see it now, Bob. I could see it.
This is a quicker one because the story isn't that long, but I still wanted to give you guys a quick idea of what exactly Jeff the Killer was and a little bit of synopsis behind the famous image.
Yeah.
So that's what we got this week, folks. It was going to be a quicker episode. I just wanted to touch a little bit base on Jeff the Killer. Count, what's your final words for the evening tonight?
Final words for the evening, Bob. Good to be back. And again, I know we're in the midst of basketball season, so we will keep people posted on that. But yeah, great to see you once again. Another episode of Bob After Dark.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for watching another episode or listening to another episode of Bob After Dark. To my parents, I just want to wish you sweet dreams. To Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I just want to wish you the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. Remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.